American history is full of the good, bad, and everything in between. But in the end, these are our stories. Today's episode will cover common sense, the French Revolution, and American crisis. So pull up a chair and join your host Jacob for a brand new episode on Thomas Paine, Spark of Revolution. Hello everyone and welcome to a brand new episode of The History Book. As the introduction said today, we'll be covering the life of Thomas Paine. Thomas was born to Joseph and Frances Paine on January 29, 1736 in Thetford, England. Thomas was given an education at Thetford Grammar School at a time when education was not required for children, and by 13 he was his father's apprentice as a staymaker. Thomas briefly served as a privateer but moved to Sandwich, Kent, and became a master staymaker. On September 27, 1759, Thomas married Mary Lambert, but she and their children died during labor shortly after Thomas's businesses collapsed. Thomas worked as a supernumerary officer and excess officer, and when he moved to London, he became a school teacher for a brief period of time. On February 19, 1768, he moved to Sussex, in an area of anti-monarchy and pro-republican sentiments. It was here that Paine married Elizabeth Olive. Thomas again found work as an excess officer and began to make pleas to Parliament for better pay and working conditions. In the summer of 1772, he published his first political work, The Case of the Officers of Excess, a 12-page article he distributed 4,000 copies of in the summer of 1774. Paine was fired from his job, his tobacco shop failed, and he went into debt shortly after. On April 14th, Paine sold all of his household possessions to pay his debt and formally separated from Elizabeth on June 4th, 1774. Thomas moved to London, and his friend, George Lewis Scott, introduced him to Benjamin Franklin. Franklin was there arguing for the American colonies and their opposition to the Stamp Act and Townshend Acts. He was publishing and editing the Pennsylvania Gazette and suggested that Paine immigrate to Philadelphia. Thomas took Franklin's recommendation and left for the colonies in October of 1774. Right now, we're going to take a brief, short social media break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Thomas Paine and the American Revolution. Hello everyone, this is the host and producer of The History Book, Jacob, here to remind you that you can stay in touch with me and The History Book on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as on our website, www.thehistorybook20.wixsite.com. As always, feel free to say hi or even leave a review of your favorite episode on Apple Podcast as well. Thanks, now let's get back to the episode. Thanks for staying tuned through that brief social media break. As I was saying before, Thomas had left England and made the trip to Philadelphia. He barely survived the journey as the water on board was bad and he arrived in the colony so close to death that Benjamin Franklin's doctor had to have him carried off the ship. Paine took 6 weeks to recover. Once he recovered and took an oath of allegiance, Paine became a citizen of Pennsylvania and earned a position as editor of the Pennsylvania Magazine. As editor, Paine published an article titled African Slavery in America. The article attacked slavery as, quote, "an outrage against humanity and justice," end quote. On January 10, 1776, Thomas Paine published his most famous work, Common Sense. This work first appeared on January 10, 1776, signed by an Englishman. Within its first 3 months, the work sold over 10,000 copies, making it an instant success. During the American Revolution, Paine would sell over 500,000 copies. At the time Common Sense was published, most of the colonists still hoped for some kind of reconciliation with Great Britain. But Paine's work showed that time had passed, and that was not possible. He also showed that despite that most colonists placed their issues at the feet of Parliament and the King's ministers, Paine showed that King George III was in fact to blame. Common Sense's success can be explained by several inputs. Paine's style was very clearly geared toward the working class, making his writings easy to understand. He was also writing at a significantly historical time and used action terms to call people to act. The publication probably had very little impact on the Continental Congress, and the issue of the Declaration of Independence. But John Adams did call the work a crapulous mass. Despite Adams' clear issues with the work, it did inspire the Revolution, increasing recruitments to the Continental Army, and became an ideological beacon for American independence. The early outcome of the war proved to need more than just common sense, with George Washington's army encamped at Valley Forge during the winter of 1776 after their near collapse in New York and New Jersey. During this time of trial, Thomas Paine published his second work, The American Crisis, to inspire the independence movement. The first crisis pamphlet said, quote, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands by it now deserves the love and thanks of men and women. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives us everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a proper price upon its goods, and it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated." End quote. Washington would have the pamphlet read out loud to his troops in camp at Valley Forge. Thomas Paine also served as Secretary of the Congressional Committee on Foreign Affairs, but ran afoul with wealthy backers of the Revolution, Robert Morris and John Jay, who at the time was President of the Continental Congress. In 1780, Paine once again published a pamphlet called Public Good. In this work, Paine argued that all the land west of the 13 original colonies belonged to the American government, not the states like Virginia that claimed it. This angered many of Paine's friends, including Richard Henry Lee, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison, who all owned land in that area. Paine's ideas would eventually come true in the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, but for now, the anger he created in his Virginia allies forced him to accept a trip to France with John Laurens to obtain more funding for the war effort. This trip to France brought back more funding for the Americans and helped establish the Bank of North America. After the American Revolution ended, Paine brought the only home he owned in New Jersey and helped to build a bridge in Philadelphia in 1787. This work on bridges led Paine to return to Paris, where, with connections from Benjamin Franklin, this allowed Paine to make contacts in France. Paine moved back to London in late 1787. Right now, we're going to take a brief music break, and when we come back, we'll discuss Paine and the French Revolution and his eventual death. Thanks for staying tuned to that brief music break. The French Revolution began in 1789, and Paine threw himself into it. His works, such as Rights of Men, published in 1791, attacked Edmund Burke's own attack on the French Revolution. In the longer work, Paine argued that the Revolution should be seen as an attack on the despotic principles of the French monarchy, not the king himself. Paine went on further to argue that human rights came from nature, and that they cannot be granted by a political charter. He wrote, quote, "It is a perversion of the terms to say that a charter gives rights. It operates by a contrary effect, that of taking rights away. Rights are inherently, in all inhabitants, by charters. By annulling those rights, and the majority leave the right by exclusion, in the hands of a few. They, consequently, are instruments of injustice." End quote. Paine argued that a government's sole purpose is to protect the individual rights. This argument was most likely worked out after Paine spent an evening with Thomas Jefferson and possibly Marquis de Lafayette. The British Crown tried Paine in absentia and convicted him of seditious libel, condemning him to hang, but Paine left England and never returned, so he was never executed. Rights of Man created such a sensation in France that Paine was given honorary French citizenship and elected to the National Convention, despite the fact he couldn't speak the language. Payne was selected as a member of the National Convention's Constitutional Committee and was an ally of the Gregorians. Payne argued that King Louis XVI shouldn't be executed, but instead exiled to America. But Jean-Paul Marat interrupted Payne's speech twice to say that first, Payne was a Quaker and his religious beliefs should make him ineligible to vote, and second, that his translator was misinterpreting his speech, which he wasn't. Payne also ran afoul of Maximilien Robespierre and was eventually arrested and imprisoned in December of 1793. Payne claimed that he was a citizen of the United States, but the American minister to France, Gouverneur Morris, refused to press for Payne's release from prison. Thomas Payne barely escaped execution during his prison sentence. A chalk mark was supposed to be left on the outside of the cell for the prisoners that were supposed to be executed. Payne's door has been left open as he was seeking official visitors, and the chalk mark was left on the inside of his door. Thomas kept his head and was eventually released from prison in November of 1794. Payne went on to publish glaring criticism of George Washington, in which he wrote, quote, "The character which Mr. Washington has attempted to act in the world is sort of nondescriptable, chameleon-colored thing called prudence. It is in many cases a substitute for principle, and is nearly allied to hypocrisy that it easily slides into it." End quote. Payne was eventually readmitted to the National Convention of France, and by 1797 was living in Paris again. He was constantly under government watch at this point for his views and would eventually move back to the United States in 1802. All these controversies led to Payne's right to vote being denied in New York upon his return. Thomas Payne died on June 8, 1809 in New York City. Only six mourners attended his funeral. His last will asked that he be buried in a Quaker cemetery, but the Quakers refused. He was instead buried under a walnut tree in New Rochelle, New York. The New York Evening Post wrote, quote, "He lived long, done some good, and much harm." End quote. In 1819, William Cobbett dug up Payne's bones and planned to rebury him in England, but he never did. Rumor has it that some of the bones were lost, destroyed, made into buttons, or just simply sold off. The only remains of Thomas Payne known to exist are near the original burial site in a secret location. Right now, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll talk about what's coming up next for the history book. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Our next episode will be coming out on August 4th, and it will be an interview with my friends at the West Virginia Mine Wars Museum in Matewan, West Virginia. I'd also like to add that this will in fact be episode 50 of the history book, and that means you might find some extra stuff across the social media pages in the next coming weeks. Until then, this has been Jacob with the History Book, and I'll see you next time.